of a Wall Street master. 2Bs used to be very uncommon in the market. Now they're extremely common in the market. It probably goes back to, our knowledge of technical analysis. The markets used to make nice, clean little double bottoms. And you see this on, is this a NASDAQ chart by any chance? Yep, sure enough. You see this on NASDAQ all the time. NASDAQ just can't make a double bottom without breaking that former low and just taking out all the people who thought it was going to go lower. Now, it also gives you tremendous information in one bar. You're always looking for something very, very similar on that low. You'll see it on start with the index charts before you look at it on individual charts. All a 2B is when something breaks a high or a low and immediately reverses. That's a 2B reversal. Very common in the futures markets, too. But you're always looking for something like, this is a hammer. This is a candlestick hammer. You're looking for that one bar reversal, or I wouldn't even say a two bar reversal. It's not even going to spend any time there. It just wants enough time to go and grab stops, grab fear, grab whatever little panic it could get in the market, and then it reverses. And you know what? When you see something like this at a low, I mean, look at the next bar, you know? Maybe you can't trade it on this index chart because it's an index chart, and it's not an NDX or anything. But this bar by itself, there are a lot of traders who see this bar, and that's why this bar is here. There are a lot of traders who see the 2B happen and immediately jump in on the long side, on the 2B bottoms, because NASDAQ is so classic in doing this now. And it's part of pattern failure. It comes back to that concept. It's a pattern failure of a new low. And after a pattern failure, you generally get a few fades, because you've already failed in one direction, so the market forces itself in the other direction, if that makes any sense. The other piece of this, I call it the big W. The big W is a classic double bottom trade, and it fits along with one other definition, which I'll say once, and I don't know if we'll have any more examples of it, but It's called first rise, first failure, which is the first time that the market's able to break a downtrend by going up 100% of where it came from. You see, from that point to that point, you see how the market works in sets of lower lows or lower lows. When it breaks the cycle, it's got to complete 100% retracement, come back all the way to the last intermediate high for it to break that cycle. And that's I call a first rise situation, which is visually, you'll see it on charts, is a reversal signal. One of the classic trades that comes out of a double bottom or a big W is the first pullback. And this first pullback trade is very, very high reward, very, very low risk, and also very, very common. I mean, it happens for obvious reasons. It's pulling back to support. There's usually a Fibonacci relationship between that point and that point, which isn't drawn here, just so you know. But so that it pulls back a third or a half or whatever. That's a very, very low risk point because the trend's been broken by the move from here to here. We're now in an uptrend. So this is a pullback in an uptrend because the trend has changed, which we've recognized by that first move all the way back up to the last intermediate high, which is that point right there. Here's another example of a 2B bottom. Once again, the market's giving you the hammers. I mean, these hammers are very, very common on 2B bottoms. And this is a different time frame. This is also a daily. Actually, the NASDAQ chart was a 5-minute chart, so this is a daily on Broad Vision. That's good. It gives you an example of how it wasn't quite as easy this time from the standpoint of we have the low over here. Here we have, it's a beautiful hammer, but there was a little bit of messing around going on right here. So you could have gotten shaken out if you're a little bit short term. By the time it gets back up here, I mean, where's an obvious place to buy if it gets back up? Either when it crosses this line or when it crosses the high of the previous day, of the previous bar. Excellent buy point. If you drop down the time frame again, probably to a 15-minute chart, you'll see a double bottom here. Then we have a few more opportunities that are given to us, as the market starts to go up, it starts to break from one line through another. And we have other entry points that we could use to jump in on fairly, maybe 3 to 5 day trades at this point on this daily. First break of a trend line, signified by the gap, morning gap right there. If you're morning gap traders, back up and see what it's gapping through on a larger chart. Is it gapping through a significant point on a larger chart? That'll tell you within the first 60 minutes, if it holds that gap, it'll tell you whether or not that gap has any importance. If you were trading this off of a 15-minute chart and that gap woke up that morning and that thing gapped and you had seen this downtrend line here, you had one pullback opportunity right to that point during the day. And that's it's a candlestick thing, which, this isn't a session on candlestick or you'd be over in Steve's room, but the candlesticks tell us that the market opened up here, pulled back to this point, then went up and closed at the top of that wide part. Third opportunity comes through a modified cup and handle. We did have, is this really a test or not when it came up through here? Not easy to see, not an easy trade to make. If you want to be a momentum trader, the best information you had was that tall bar that day. You see a bar like that, it's not planning on going anywhere. I wouldn't touch it because I can't find what my risk is on that. I don't know if the next day it's going to pull back. If it pulls back to 55, if I can get my numbers right, pulls back to 65, then I might plan on buying it. But if that thing just starts gapping up, that's not for me. That's just personally. The 2B bottom, and I think I have a 2B top, and it's a little bit more detail. 2B tops, just like 2B bottoms, and this shows a sequence of trades. It's a little bit complicated as things get cranking here on Novell, but this is Novell's top. When it hit 44, it's like at 8 now, okay? And how Novell ever made it to 44 is just absolutely beyond me. I hope there's nobody here from Utah, but this thing makes a new high that day. Now, if you went to bed that night and bought that stock about 43, you might have been feeling pretty good about yourself. Now, remember what we said about buying the second high or the first test of a high. The next morning, the stock gaps down to what I call a hole-in-the-wall gap. Hole-in-the-wall is a gap off of a new high. And get my time frame straight here. Yeah, these are both dailies. It immediately gives you opportunity if there's a pullback into that gap later in the day, anywhere around 42. The market does go straight down and gives you a second opportunity, I believe, right in that circle, that's number 5. You see where it breaks that little ascending trend line? You have the gaps that's telling you the trend is over. You have the 2B top that's telling you a one bar that's telling you a top's taking place, which is really what a 2B is. And then you have a trend line break short term. If you're trading off of a daily chart, you can't do this. If you're trading intraday and you know what the daily chart looks like, as soon as that thing cuts through 40, you're breaking another trend line. And you already have the confirmation the market should be going down. You have it from the daily chart. You have it from two or three things that are happening on the daily chart. I use stochastics for certain things. I generally use a 14-day RSI for my daily charts. And I use that as a buy and sell oscillator. That's how I use it, especially on indexes, to tell me when the indexes are overbought and oversold, and you do the same thing for stocks. But very short-term stochastics is very, very effective, not when it crosses into overbought or oversold territory and has never made it, should be a line across 20 here, oversold territory, but stochastics is very, very effective when it does little double toppy things. When you see little double tops in here, these kinds of things, that's where stochastics is effective in focusing your timing. But you don't use it by itself. I always work from the pattern first. You're using this here to find support for what your pattern is. I don't do things the other way around, personally. I don't think I could trade off this part of the chart. I can only trade off of this part of the chart. Use this part of the chart to give me a little bit more confidence that I'm doing the right thing. But it's one of the few times I can't. This means nothing to me. I don't know what to do here. But you start to see this, and it's actually it's another Linda thing. The 1, 2, 3 up, 1, 2, 3 down. Well, the double top is the 2. So there should be a 3 coming. As soon as that rolls over, that's telling you that, or giving you more information that your point of view is correct, that the trade that you're making has support, that your risk is less than you thought, and your reward might be more than you thought. A couple more trades that came out of this. It's a very difficult stock to trade. And, you know, I use Fibonacci an awful lot, and Fibonacci can be summed up in 30 seconds. You draw a Fibonacci grid from the beginning of the trend to the end of the trend, and then concentrate on the 38%, 50%, and 62% levels. Forget the rest. Throw out the rest. Don't try to figure out the mathematics. Don't try to understand it unless you have a real genuine interest in it. But the markets will swivel off of hidden support and resistance at the 38%, 50%, and 62% levels in all time frames and all charts, but also in all trends, which messes you up too, because there could be several trends taking place at the same time. But in this case, the market pulls back to a 50% level and starts playing games. You can play pinball. On pullbacks, you can play pinball in the middle part of Fibonacci retracements. They tend to get stuck between 50 and 62%. They tend to get stuck between 38% and 50%. You can use it as a swing reversal. If you have other information, there's not a lot of stuff on this chart, but I could have Bollinger Bands on it. I could have moving averages on it. I could have other information, and I'm sure I would. I'm that confident that I'd find reasons to sell that thing at 34 because there'd be something like a 20-day moving average sitting there. Fibonacci never works in a vacuum because the markets are always really perverse. They give you the same thing in so many different discontinuous ways. And we're talking about what's called the charting landscape a little while back to some other folks, and that's putting as much information as you can. And we have a couple charts that have everything on it. Things like Bollinger Bands in your charts and lots of moving averages on your charts and Fibonacci on your charts. The confusing thing for newer traders is, what's important? Which one do I concentrate on? Is it this Fibonacci thing? Is it this moving average? Is it this gap? What should I be looking at? Now, the answer is, in one sentence, the answer is everything and nothing. The answer is, look at the thing that's important for that particular situation, which is a great, it's almost like Zen, you know? You know, what's the sound of one hand clapping, right? What it really means is you're looking to see where all this stuff intersects, and I think we did talk about that a few minutes ago. When you have all this stuff up there and everything converges like this at one point, that's what you're supposed to be looking at. When your Fibonacci level hits that Bollinger Band edge, which hits that major moving average, which is right at that gap, that's it. That's it. You didn't have to individually know whether the moving average is important or how to deal with Fibonacci retracements or how did Bollinger Band work? Did I set the standard deviations right on the Bollinger Bands? When they crisscross like that, you have the market talking to you. It's a noise-to-signal ratio thing. That's as much signal as you're going to get. It's never going to be black and white. It's always going to be shades of gray. What you're looking for is to get the lightest shade of gray you can for a long position and the darkest, deepest shade of gray you can for a short position. You can't, it's always going to have warts and bruises, and that's okay. That's what you have to deal with. That's why there's always odds involved. You always can be wrong, and that's why you always have to take defensive measures. And risk management, horrible word, just a horrible word. But you have to have risk management because you know what? None of us are smart enough to be right all the time. And no matter what we do, we have the chance of being wrong. One of the best ways I find of minimizing my risk is entering positions very close to the point where I know I'm going to be wrong if price hits it. I'll say that again. One of the best ways that I minimize risk, and that I think all traders minimize risk, is to where your entry and your exit point are almost the same point. Where your entry point, because the trade's so good, is almost the same point as your exit point because the trade didn't work. Now, it's not as complicated as it might sound. I'll give you a perfectly simple example. You enter a stock at a trend line. How many ticks does it take for you to know the trend line's broken? You enter above the trend line, you don't know you're wrong till it breaks the trend line. Your reward is smaller, your risk is greater. Your best reward risk exists at the point where your entry and exit point, really, ideally, it would be the same point. Your entry and exit point would be the same. An ideal sort of like, you know, mystical world. Obviously, you can't do that. But the trend line example is about as close as you come. You want to find those points where this thing's only got to go. If I see it drop an eighth, I know I messed up. And guess what? You lose an eighth of a point. You could do that 3, 4, 5 times. You get shaken out. Sure, you're going to be wrong. It'll drop down that eighth. You're going to sell, and it'll pop back above the line. And that's going to bother you, which is a mistake, because it's going to happen for the rest of your life, no matter how successful or unsuccessful you are. You're always going to be wrong, but it only costs you an eighth of a point to be wrong, and you missed an opportunity, but that's okay, because there's another opportunity coming along down the road. You have to be willing to miss a lot of opportunities to be ultimately successful, because if you try to jump in on every opportunity you see, you're going to find out that a lot of those aren't opportunities. It's a selectivity thing. This is the last slide, the end of Novell. This is where it made it to the bottom. There were a couple more tough trades here. The best one, though, I believe if I have my brain on straight, that point number one and number two is a break of the 62% retracement of the largest trend. This is a pull, it's a pullback trade. When something breaks, go back to this, we talked about the 100% retracement thing. When does a trend change? My simple solution to trend change is that when it breaks the 62% retracement, the trend's changed. When a stock retraces more than 62% of the prior trend, I expect it to retrace 100%. I expected to go the rest of that 38% down. Now, does it always happen? No. In fact, a real classic thing that's going on these days are for stocks, again, of course, we all know technical analysis, to pull back 62%, make that break, and then make the break about to 70, 75%, and then jump back above 62%. Now, you can do two things at that point if you're in the trade. You realize you're wrong and you start kicking yourself for it, or when it jumps back above 62%, you can buy it. There was a pattern failure trade there. The market can only mess your brain in one direction at a time. It's gone and taken out and shot people who were trying to sell that Fibonacci retracement, they were trying to buy the Fibonacci retracement and it kept on going. But when it pops back above, they've opened up the door. They've shown you their whoever they are, they've showed you their plan, and it's harder for them to go and bring it back down again. It's the same pattern failure thing we're talking about. You can only fail in one direction. You can't keep failing back and forth because you're taking demand out of one side of the market, and you're tilting the equation so much that the other side becomes the high probability event. The ascending triangle breaks out of the pattern. That becomes the high probability event for it to keep on going down. In this particular instance, you got what you should see on anything that's real in the market. When you get a real breakdown or breakout, you should see price expansion. We're talking about price expansion, contraction. Look at those two bars. Was it? Yeah, well, really three bars. Look how price moved from 26 down to 20 or 21. You should get, when a classic point is broken, you should get expansion out of that point. I don't have volume on this, but it must be volume. It looked like a lot of unhappy people right there, you know? When you get price expansion out of a move, that tells you, now chances are, no pattern failure is going to take place. It's done what it's supposed to, like on a channel break. Channel break was actually, here's one right here. But on a true price move, and this is with anything, not just a cup and handle or any other common setup, when a real move happens, it should get up and get out of there. That's a clue that it was real. At that point, unfortunately, many traders turn around and they try to chase it. They try to jump in short as it's dropping down, which is, of course, the wrong thing to do. following the crowd in, trying to follow the crowd in, when you'd be standing back and waiting, waiting for the pullback. The pullback comes so often. Why does it come? I'm in the conspiratorial mood, you know? There's good reasons, once there's a breakout, to take out the shorts, so there's a short squeeze at that point. Where's the short squeeze going to end? The short squeeze ends wherever resistance is. If you're patient, you had a perfect entry point, right back at the point of the breakdown. Now, it didn't have to go up to that point. Maybe it never reached, you're saying, I'm going to short this stock, at 26 and a quarter, or 26 and an eighth. And it doesn't reach that point. And you can't find an entry point. You miss the trade. That's okay. You miss the trade. But the odds favor that you're going to get the pullback, and you're going to get the pullback to your price more often than not. So you're going to get the successful high-reward, low-risk trade on the pullback. And how much risk is there if you bought that stock at 26 and, I don't know, 26 and a quarter, 26 and a half? How much risk do you face? Short that stock at 26 and a quarter. How much risk do you face right at that point? Well, if it keeps on going up even a little bit after that point, you got to feel that that thing's repopped to 62% and you got to get out. You don't have a lot of risk at pullback points, because if they keep pulling back, they're beyond the point that you saw where the support resistance was. So risk is very low and reward is very high on pullbacks. And pullbacks belong to every category of setups. Anything on this last guy here? Up and down. Oh, it's just the angle thing. Here's another example. We're talking about the Mesa top, about how things go down at the same angle that they go up. And using trend mirrors, looking back horizontally into the past to where you see a lot of vertical price movement. And when price returns to that area, that helps you set reward targets by looking at the verticalness of it. You want to trade stuff that's pretty vertical. That's where the money is. Chances are, if it moved quickly and there are a lot of expansion bars going up, it's going to do the same thing going down, and vice versa. I call that clear air. There's just air pockets. It's like an airplane that hits one of those pockets and just goes like that. There's spots in the market, when looking back in the past, that you'll see that clear air in operation. And chances are, when the market enters those zones again, you're going to be in the same situation. I have to put this under some light here. This is my Mickey Mouse watch. I must let you know. What time is it? 10 after 2? It is 10 after 2? Is it that late already? Wow. Okay. We're going to move faster. Channel break. Two quick channel break trades. I'm actually doing pretty well. Clean channel break. Price expansion out of the move. Comes back in. Here's a great entry point. And jumps back in the channel. This is the same day, yeah, about an hour later. Comes back, breaks the channel to the upside. Great trade going up to the upside. Pretty clean. But once the channel's broken and jumps back in, great entry spot. Because the channel has failed, but then it's reestablished itself. Trading symmetrical triangles, 2 points. Number one, symmetrical triangles have to overcome obstacles to get to where they're going. They always have a high that they have to deal with. So the expectation is, this stock performed pretty well. The expectation is that you're going to have resistance across this line. If you trade a symmetrical triangle, you usually get a good pullback point to the wherever the descending line was. I personally would set an exit point up at that high just in case. It's always has to face that resistance. You really can't get around it. But the odds favor, once this event takes place, or the odds actually favor higher prices. So if you're a little bit long-termer, there's no reason you can't hold on to something like that. Getting a clue about symmetrical triangles. Right here is what's called an NR7. It's the narrowest range bar of the last 7 bars. Very often, symmetrical triangles will give you one of those just before they explode, even on very short-term charts. Always look for you're looking for the clue that it's going to happen. This is where you're stepping in front of the crowd. Symmetrical trials give it to you with, we call it the coiled spring over a hard right edge site. This symmetrical triangle also takes place in the exact middle, exact dead middle of the symmetrical triangle. The coiled spring takes place in the middle. Head and shoulders. I'm going to go on to the second slide with this just to show you what misery you would have faced. Here's the breakdown point of head and shoulders. Yeah, it actually breaks. Take a look at the volatility on this stock on a 60-minute chart over the day that follows the head and shoulders. Tell me how easy or hard it was to make money and what happens because so many people know that a head and shoulders pattern exists. There's so much, and Nextel loves doing this anyway, but there's so much volatility and so many fades and swings on that thing that you wouldn't know if you were coming and going. That's what makes it so difficult to trade common patterns. Now, you could have waited, and there are a few good opportunities in here, but for the most part, it's mostly a warning. Don't bother with, this is the most popular, well-known pattern in the world, probably, when it comes to TA. I mean, my mother-in-law knows what a head and shoulders pattern is. There's no advantage to anybody in the market, I think, these days, to just go and take that down. When people didn't know what it was a lot easier. We're going to go back to the concept of the guru. And this is about a holy grail. And I have something about wolf waves and stuff that shows up in books, stuff that shows up at websites, stuff that costs money, stuff that's free. Almost every well-known pattern that you'll pay money to learn about has generic forms that are free for the taking. The proprietary nature of proprietary setups is that someone named them, owns the name, feels like they created the pattern, invented the pattern. The patterns work, but at the same time, all they are variations on other stuff. And it doesn't take anything back from the people who brought them to you. It's saying that the markets are changing. It's saying that you don't need to pay a fortune for your setups anymore. You need to understand, or you don't need to understand, we all need to understand that the markets are all do very common things, and anybody could come along and put a name on them. I do. Hard Right Edge has tons of names for things. It has even has a name for something like a holy grail, which I call a dip trip. And this is a dip trip trade. Pullbacks to a continuation gap, which is the middle part of a trend, are almost always buyable. But you got to wait until they pull back and not be impatient. Here's a five-wave move, and we're not going to talk about Elliott Wave, but it's a five-wave move. Right in the middle of a move, you very often get a continuation gap. That's a runaway gap right in the middle of a trend. Well, eventually a top's made, and the market pulls back. When price pulls back into, here's our continuation gap up here, when price pulls back into that continuation gap, even though anywhere on the far side of that, filled side of that continuation gap, is a high reward, very low risk trade. Because continuation gaps rarely get filled the first time around, except by another gap. That's my only caveat to continuation gaps. So often you will see this now. It used to be they never even made it down to where they filled, but of course, they're well known enough now that they fill them just to mess with people's minds. But I'd have no problems buying this thing right down at the fill point. You see it in all time frames too. It's a wonderful trade. How do you find continuation gaps? You put a Fibonacci retracement over the entire thing, entire trend, go to the 50% point and look for a gap. Bet you find one there on strong trends very often. That's a continuation gap. After the move is done and price is broken down, you know that that trend's over or discontinued for the time being, and it pulls back to that point. So often, an excellent long side trade. Don't hold on too long. There's nothing to say that gap's not going to get filled later on. Don't expect new high prices unless you have some other information that takes you there. Now, what is this? It's a pullback trade. Do you know how many names there are for pullback trades? How many variations there are on them? I mean, Holy Grail's a pullback trade. The Dip Trip's a pullback trade. You could come up with your own name and set of circumstances and tell folks like myself about it. It'd be the first time we've ever heard about it, and it'll work real, real well because you've discovered another little quirk within the market. I'm going to thank Temple Williams for this. One of the most protected market patterns is called Wolf Waves, named after, coincidentally, somebody by the name of Bill Wolf. I'm using Temple's definitions of Wolf Waves. It looks real, real complicated, but we'll show you how simple it is. I'll show you an example of it rather than going through the rules. But it looks pretty complicated. And here's an example of a working Wolf Wave. Something makes last low, makes a high. The next low is lower than the last low. The next high is, the next high is, reaches the top or is higher than this point. I think that's the only rule. You're supposed to buy at 5 on a slanting line. You draw a line between 1 and 3 and buy at 5. And it's a good reason why I'd be glad to send you my slides, okay, if you want to spend some time looking at it. But it's a Wolf Wave. Now, it's extremely proprietary trade. From what I understand, it costs you a lot of money to get the secret hidden knowledge about a Wolf Wave. But let's look at mine, and it's only my opinion, caveat, only my opinion, about what a Wolf Wave could be. Wolf Wave looks an awful lot like a Head and Shoulders that fails. It looks an awful lot like a Hound of the Baskervilles. In fact, it is a Hound of the Baskervilles in this case. Can you see the Head and Shoulders? Here's the left shoulder. There's the head. This is the hard part to make out, but it fits the rules perfectly. That's actually a right shoulder right there. Then what happens? It doesn't go down. Well, it did. It took some people out there. Generally, you find the failure point by looking up into the pattern and finding where the trend line would be rising. And that's where you don't want to enter in here. You want to wait until you know you have an uptrend. A failure of this line doesn't indicate, and this bar doesn't indicate an uptrend. Of course, it could just go this way and then keep on going. Generally, what you have is when one pattern fails, another trade sets up that has to have its own rules. And in this particular case, you just look around and you find where the descending line is. When it breaks that descending line, you've moved into an uptrend. Somebody knew about it because, I mean, look at the breakout and pullback here. Look how this thing operated when it broke that line. Breaks out, not an easy trade by any means, pulls back and finally takes off. In fact, if you take a look at Yahoo's or Amazon's chart for August of last year, or that was August, was August the bottom last year, or August or September? If you take a look at Amazon or Yahoo last year, you'll see this exact same formation as the beginning of the move that we had on NASDAQ from October to March. It was a pattern failure of a Head and Shoulders. And that Head and Shoulders was being talked about by Maria on CNBC. It was in all the newspapers. Everybody was talking about the Head and Shoulders. It had almost no chances of succeeding and the market actually falling by the point. Because everybody knew about it and everybody saw it. Or let's look at it a different way. I've checked this out, and you'll have to take my word for it, but this fits the rules for a Wolf Wave the way I understand them. It fits into a simple Elliott Wave pattern. Elliott says you get 5 waves up and 3 waves down. The market goes up in 3 primary waves with 2 little pullbacks, and then it does a 1, 2, 3 down before it decides to go up again. To me, what's being sold, in my opinion, only my personal opinion, that's all, period, is a variation of a simple Elliott wave, which is something that existed probably the last 70 years in writing material. I'll take questions at the end. I'd be glad to. So you broaden your vision to see other things in the market, to see original things. And my timing's almost perfect because I only have a couple slides left. What's an original setup? Original setup is basically comprised of pieces of classic setups put together in original ways. The market so many times will give you a setup that's got 3 or 4 or 5 different elements of the common setups in them. And that's where the money is, friends. I feel like a salesman. The money's where the combination of setups takes it out of the realm where everybody sees something simple. But what it requires is a little bit of a jigsaw puzzle where you have to put the pieces together and reach the right conclusion. It takes some experience. Let's give some. I'll give you some examples. I only have about 7 minutes left. This is a hole in the wall. A hole in the wall tells you that you're in a downtrend very, very early. It's also a head and shoulders pattern that worked. Now, hole in the wall, as we said, is, from my definition, is original because you can't read about it everywhere. So it still has some original aspects to it. The market tends to go straight down, pull back. And this is a head and shoulders that worked because you just can't fool all the people all the time. Simple pattern, simple piece of an original pattern. And I'm going to jump ahead one, two, let me jump three. I want to find one thing, and then I'll come back on it. This. Other, not so original, but really it has original aspects. It's this contraction, coiled spring setups where you have contraction before breakout. Not very well known in the market. This is of Ross Stores. I used to trade that all the time. There's an NR7, or the narrowest range day in 7 days, taking place 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times before 8 breakouts. And this, that could be programmed on a computer for you to find yourself. That's all the coiled springs are at a hard right edge. But I want to show you how you put pieces together because we only have just a couple minutes. So I'm going to back up here. Yeah, I think I'll show you this one. Yeah, I like this one. This is a breakout to a new high that people get slaughtered on. And it's a combination of a few different things. First, you have a new high breakout. You've got a breakout gap up here, supposedly. You've got parallel price channels. So we have three different elements of fairly common setups. Now, the next slide moves in a little bit closer and looks and watches what happens after that thing makes a new high. It creates first a, I don't know if you call it a descending triangle. It's not perfect. It's got a lot of warts on it. See that gap where number three is? That, when you look at your eye, it says bearish, but it doesn't follow all the rules that you've learned about things like descending triangles. But yet, you know that that stock should go down. It's telling you very, very early, probably as early as number three, that eventually this gap's going to fill, and that's your trigger up here. You're looking at that trigger point to get into the trade. At the same time, as this descending triangle kind of thing is starting to weaken, our rising, it's approaching. Remember that parallel price channel I showed you coming up? Price is approaching that parallel channel. The first thing it does is breaks off of the low, breaks out of a little double top, which is what it is, and then pulls back one time, and then comes real, real close to that line. Now, an experienced trader at that point, watching here, because we're talking about getting this, this is where our money is here, when that triangle gets filled, because it's a much bigger formation. Waiting for that point to fill is as easy as watching these two price bars. You're combining pieces of gaps, parallel price channels, descending triangles, and double tops all into one trade. And I have one more example of that, and I have trouble finding all the rules, and this is the last slide, of just a great trade on Xilinx that I can't quite get all the pieces. I mean, what do you want to call it? It's a descending, you got a descending trend line coming down here. I don't think you could call it anything else. It doesn't even look like a clean double top. It's kind of an odd thing. Maybe it's like a big W. I can't really know what to call it. But you've got a couple important things going on. We're talking about, number one, the price bars here are showing that clear air. There's opportunity if it breaks out. That's telling us we have some reward if it breaks out. We have a small breakout of that descending triangle, a descending trend line, excuse me. That says that the stock has strength, but you still can't necessarily find out where there's any profit for you. And you've got some obstacles along the way. Here's an obstacle, here's an obstacle, here's an obstacle, and here's an obstacle. But the point from here up to that point is, let's see, from 68 up to about 75, about 7 points. And then the stock does one of these. Now, I'm not saying you could buy this bar here, but there was so much information on this bar. And it came from this. You had a huge gap. Volume was great. You had a little bit of pullback, and the stock starts to strengthen in the afternoon. You could have bought that stock anytime that day and been part of the other half of this. With how many? One wiggle the whole way up. One little thing there. What was it? It was only about a point. Held on to that stock for about 3 days and made about 7 points on very little risk. What was your risk here for buying at this point? Your risk was probably a pullback below this line right here. You could have even bought it earlier in the day because of the strength of the opening, if you had some courage. None of this, though, I mean, the only recognizable pattern you really have here is a symmetrical triangle. I think maybe I call it a descending triangle. That's the only identifiable piece. But you've taken pieces of your knowledge and put it together into an obvious solution. So that a single bar is telling you that you have an opportunity in the market. Now, if you weren't looking in the right place, you couldn't see it. It did give you the opportunity to start to pay attention right here because you had an initial breakout. Not a lot of opportunity here. If you bought it right here, you weren't doing your reward risk necessarily well because of all these tops here. That says resistance. But it tells you to start looking here. And this tells you that the spring is getting wound up. Okay, listen, I want to thank you for your time. I've come right down to the end of it. Be sure, and I'll give you my email address again. If you'd like a copy of the presentation, the revised materials, it's trader@hardrightedge.com. And I'll be here to answer any questions after this is all done. And I really want to thank you for your time today.